Hey gang, it's Thursday, December 30th. Listeners, welcome to the Behind the Numbers Daily Holiday Special, a new marketer podcast made possible by Basis Technologies. I'm Marcus. Today's holiday fact, I've got two for you. Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer was originally created as an advertising gimmick. According to the Smithsonian Insider, Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer appeared, and you can't say that without wanting to sing the song, okay? So let me just say that. First appeared in 1939, Rudolph did, when Montgomery Ward department store asked one of its copywriters, 34-year-old Robert L. May, to create a Christmas story the store could give away to shoppers as a promotional gimmick. And thus, Rudolph was born, with Montgomery Ward distributing 2.4 million copies of the story in the first year of its publication. So now that I've ruined Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer for you, the second fact, Santa has a postal code in Canada. This is too good. If you are in Canada and want to get in touch with Mr. Santa Claus, you can send him a letter via the Canada Post mail system. The address, of course, Santa Claus, North Pole, H-O-H-O-H-O, ho ho ho, but split into too good. Canada is the last part of the address. And don't be surprised when you get a letter back. He has some helpers who keep up with his correspondence. I'm absolutely sending him a letter. I've got to. We need to talk. Anyway, on today's episode, and all this week, in fact, we've been bringing you some of our favorite conversations from the year. And on today's episode, we start with an episode from earlier this year that looked at what the media world will look like in 2030, looking at digital ads, shopping, and banks. And in the second half, we keep looking into the future to see what 2030 will look like with regards to pay TV, digital video, and esports. Hey gang, Monica, Shalene, Cindy, Oscar, and listeners, welcome to the Behind the Numbers Daily, an e-marketer podcast. I'm Marcus, and today I'm joined by so many people. We have a bunch of forecasting folks with us. Let's go through them. We have with us one of our directors of forecasting. It's Cindy Liu.
Hi, guys.
Hello there. Another director of forecasting, Oscar Orozco.
Hey, Marcus.
Hey, chap. We also have a senior director of forecasting, Shalene Shum.
Hi, everyone.
Hey, Shalene. And finally, we have the person who runs the team, head of forecasting. It's Monica Pitt.
Thanks for having us, Marcus.
Thanks for being here, folks. So what will the world look like in 2030? Andrew S. Winston of the MIT Sloan Management Review thinks that a few things. One, there will be about a billion more people in the world. Great. India will overtake China as the most populated country on Earth. Nigeria will overtake the US as the third most populated country in the world. There will be over a billion people who are over the age of 65, since we'll be living a little bit longer. Half of the global new cars will be electric, says UBS, and we might even be ready to move humans towards Mars, thinks Ellen Stefan, former chief scientist at NASA. But what will the world of media look like in 2030? Well, who better to ask than a group of forecasters? So I asked our forecasting team what they thought. Monica, we already have forecasts that stretch out to 2025.
Right.
I asked you guys to push even further out to 2030. How did you approach this question and manage to come back with some thoughts on what the world might look like then?
Yeah, this was a really interesting and fun exercise, Marcus. And when you asked us about it, we, you know, immediately said, well, we have forecasts to this point, but then,
is that not good enough for you, Marcus?
Right.
2025 isn't fun. Fair enough.
Stretching it out a bit more is, you know, yep, stretching our powers as forecasters, of course, but it's definitely maybe as interesting as some of the other predictions you were just mentioning from lots of experts around the globe and around different industries. But for media, we approach this usually by looking at lots of data, tons of data, and pulling in every data point that we can find to say how much will be happening, how much money we'll be transacting, how many people will be doing XYZ. And that requires a bit of a layered approach. While we're looking at, you know, maybe one topic in forecasts, we might have other forecasts that have an input on that same topic. Mm-hmm. And we might have lots of a series of data points that we have to pull in to make sense of it. For something like this, we're in a good position because we already have forecasts. So we're leaning into what those forecasts have already said, at least through the next 4 to 5 years, and extrapolating those trends, those same trends, to the next 5 years and saying, okay, if those things remain constant through 2030, what would that look like? So we're doing a bit of a pared down methodology, as it were, just to look at what would our current trends produce if we were to extend our forecast that far into the future. And that's pretty typical for us.
Right. Yeah, Monica, to what you said a bit earlier on, there's a good chance, you know, that things will happen and we'll knock these forecasts off course, just like with anything that, you know, we can't prepare. We can't account for every eventuality. Right. I thought it was going to be sunny this afternoon and actually no, it's raining. So trying to forecast out 10 years is pretty tough. So with that in mind, with the idea of, you know, we have these forecasts of 2025, we stretch them even further. What will the world look like in 2030? We came back with about 10 different trends, 10 different ways in which we think the world's going to look in 2030. We've got about 5 of them for you on today's show. We'll do part 2, another 5. We'll start with the first one. Monica, you were looking at the world of digital advertising. What do you expect to see for digital advertising in 2030?
Right. Well, starting with this, you know, we look at several companies and see what are their revenues and contribution to digital advertising in the US and globally. Today, we're talking about the US, but we want to see, well, who are the top 3? Is that going to change? And anybody who's been following this at all will know that Google, Facebook, and Amazon are currently in the top 3, you know, affectionately named triopoly when we talk about it internally, and we all know what that means. A little less nefarious than most people think of that word. But when we start out with where we are today or where we expect to be today, you know, Google right there on top with 29% share of the U.S. digital ad spending market is the biggest single player by itself. And that's not surprising. Google is where we all go to learn everything that we know, where what we ask our smart speakers, you know, for recommendations or for what is an armadillo and lots of other things. Can you please play that new Katy Perry song for me? And so, yes, a mammal. Funny enough, that lays eggs, but that's another thing entirely. so we know that Google would be really dominant and strong in search, and that should continue, actually. But one thing that's a reality for Google is that search dominance is really their sandbox. That's really where they play. So as we think about the next 10 years or the next 9 years, because we're looking at 2030, you know, Google is losing some of the market share just because others are growing a bit faster. There aren't a lot of new search players that are entering the market, but one probably unexpected one is e-commerce search. Google, while they have Google Shops, I believe it's called, Google Shopping, it has not been as successful, I would say, as big player Amazon and many others in the e-commerce space. And that is where we see some encroachment upon Google's share there, not making it any less dominant than other players, but definitely encroaching upon their market. So as e-commerce has grown and the activity around it has grown, we see that Amazon and even other e-commerce players are taking up some of the search share that would have gone to Google. And that's really becoming Amazon's game, Amazon and others, I should say, becoming their game. And when we think about down the line, you know, 29% this year, Google's share is likely to continue to fall, but very slightly, fall to around 27%, we would say, to 2030. And that's a big deal. Google, like I said, is really dominant. But one thing to keep in mind is that Google's share falling below, say, a quarter of the market, 25%, would be really an unlikely scenario. So what we have here is it basically getting somewhat close to that number, but still a little bit higher than that 25% share, just given their sheer size. And then when you think about second player in line, Facebook, because of the strength that it has gained over the years with, you know, just Facebook as a core social network company, but acquiring lots of different arms and legs with Instagram, with WhatsApp, and other messaging services, it's becoming a bigger company in its own right. And so while it is now at 25%, a quarter of the digital ad spending market, it will likely continue to grow. So it does not take too much from Google, but it grows in a space that was owned by other media. So growing from 25% to possibly rivaling Google, getting up to maybe a little bit over Google, is not a huge stretch. So we're saying by the end of what we're calling the extended forecast, if you will, 2030, we could likely see Facebook at 28%. So just 1% outpacing Google. Probably a lot of contentious thoughts about that, but it really stems from us seeing that Facebook continues to grow its mass and coverage, including in areas like e-commerce, social commerce, which is a subset of e-commerce, and that becoming a real factor in user growth. And then, of course, advertisers. Advertisers want to follow the eyeballs wherever they went, and their properties are still very popular.
And where's Facebook today?
Facebook today at a quarter of digital ads.
So 25%
ads,
today?
Right, so 25% today.
Okay, and how about Amazon?
Yeah, so Amazon is somewhat of a newcomer to the game of dominance when it comes to the U.S. ad market, but not a small player by any stretch, not small fries. When we look at where they are today, they take up around 11% of the digital ad spending market. That will grow another 5 percentage points or so by 2030. And that's at a very rapid clip. Right now, our forecast continues through 2023. So that's actually where our forecast drops off. And then from there, we expect it to slow somewhat as it becomes very dominant in the space, but still continue to grow share as it marches into areas like pharmaceuticals and starts to play in other categories within e-commerce that maybe weren't as dominant before. So we do expect it to continue to grow share. And one thing I will say about the top three is altogether, they are reaching 65% of the market, but they'll still grow together. Even with Google losing some small share by the end, they'll still all grow together to reach 71% of the market, given our current trends today.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so in 2030, the top three digital ad players will own 71% of the market. Today it's 65. We think 2030, it will be 71%. We think Google will tick down a few points. Facebook will tick up a few points, threatening Google's first place. And then Amazon will gain 5 points and will be in a strong third position.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's fascinating, just the fact that the three are gaining share. I mean, based off of what, you know, Monica just explained, I mean, the real competition will come, and I think that'll be the case, you know, 9 years from now from e-commerce and from search. So is there a possibility that Walmart or Shopify might gain some share or eat into the top threes? I don't know. That was something that came to mind.
Yeah, I think that's totally possible. E-commerce as a whole is going to rise all boats, so to speak. Walmart and others are actually gaining on this trend and will likely continue to be dominant in the e-commerce space.
I'm going to be speaking with Erik Hagstrom actually about that exact question a bit later on this week, and getting his take on who is that fourth player, who is going to be the fourth star that emerges, maybe not as far as 2030, but I'm going to ask him, you know, today and over the next couple of years, who can we expect to be the kind of fourth star in the digital ad space? Fascinating. Monica, Monica, thank you so much. Let's move on to our second trend, online shopping. Cindy, what did we discover online shopping is going to look like in 2030?
Yeah, so we think that by 2030, that over one third of all retail spending will be made online. And, you know, that's really because of all the inroads that were finally made last year in grocery specifically, as people, you know, have become more comfortable buying online. You know, I think that these trends will just accelerate. And so we're predicting that in 10 years, about 25% or I guess $1 in $4 spent on groceries will be made via online channels. And, you know, to think of it another way, you know, that's kind of similar to saying that one out of every four grocery trips that you make a month would be made online. And so to me, that's not unreasonable to say, you know, and to counter that, you know, you might think that a third of retail spending could, you know, we might be underestimating. It might sound a little low, but, you know, we also have to take into account the predominantly offline categories like auto and gas that we include in our retail numbers. And unless we start seeing, you know, major disruption in the auto industry, we have sort of, you know, over the last couple of years seen, you know, with Carvana and Tesla. But unless that really starts to, you know, disrupt the market, e-commerce will likely still be capped at around 70% penetration levels. And that's because auto and gas account for about 30% of retail.
Can gas ever be sold online?
No.
Could you ever buy gas and have it delivered to your house?
Never say never.
Never say never.
I'm not saying storing large stockpiles of gasoline at your house is a good idea, but could you not envision a world where you click buy and they show up and you can just, as opposed to having to go to find a gas station every time you get home, you just tip, similar to how you put gas in a lawnmower.
Right, but I feel like gas is like, is this product that is really based on supply and demand, right? There must be supply. And, you know, we've seen over the last month or two with the gas shortage scare, people were going to gas stations and hoarding the gas.
Yeah, we probably shouldn't let people buy online.
It's a terrible idea.
So you said a third of retail spending being online. That's up from 14% today.
Yes, right? Just 14%. And then I looked at, you know, 10 years prior, so like 2010, and e-commerce was really, you know, it was just a fraction. It was like less than 5% of total retail sales. So by 2030, you know, and really the major categories that would be driving this are the strong holdouts, and that's mainly food and beverage and health, personal care, and beauty. By the end of the forecast, you know, I have about, again, like about a quarter of food and beverage spending being made online.
Right. So they're the categories that still have room to even grow.
Yes, there's still room.
Okay, 10% of grocery online today, 25% we think will be online by 2030. Any other thoughts from anyone else on this this prediction?
I hope this means produce is going to be fresh everywhere, just everywhere. We can just count on that.
Yeah, I mean, with curbside pickup and things like this, I think it was something maybe a couple of years ago we wouldn't have even thought of necessarily. And I think that does create a higher ceiling in a way. So, but I think that number is, it makes sense from what Cindy just explained.
Yeah, curbside is just this huge transformative activity that just, you know, accelerated last year. And, you know, a lot of retailers like Walmart, for example, I think in their last earnings, they like had a really interesting quote about why I think they're sunsetting their automated lockers like in store. And one of the reasons was they said, consumers told us last year they want to pick up items in one place, and that one place is curbside. They want to do it outside.
Interesting.
Yeah, I think this means that US actually will move up in rank to the fourth place out of all the markets in the world. I think it's going to, with the 33%, I think it moves up to fourth place just behind China, UK, and South Korea.
Fascinating.
Right now it's at six.
Wait, so that's the current ranking at the minute? China has the most amount of shopping online, then the UK, then South Korea?
Yeah. So right now US is in the sixth place, actually. So with this, it will go up to the fourth place. And I don't think it'll ever catch up to China. China is going to surpass 50% by next year. So Right. You know, with 33% in 2030 for the US, it's still a long way more.
And Shalene, why is that? Why is China able to be so far ahead in terms of how people want to shop for things, but in terms of buying things online?
Right. I think China is a very special case. I think it kind of leapfrogged the traditional ways of doing a lot of things. Payments, and you know, it's online for a long time. That ease of paying for stuff online, you know, it kind of leapfrogged the whole credit card thing. Mm-hmm. And I guess it's just that the platforms in China are so dominant. And they've also expanded so far into the rural areas. And they've also pioneered new ways of shopping, like, you know, live streaming e-commerce is extremely hot there. So
yeah,
they're really the leaders in e-commerce right now.
And mm-hmm. I think the one other thing to point out too is that, you know, the US is predominantly brick and mortar. And that, again, that goes back to this concept where the US has the most retail square footage per person in the world. Mm-hmm. You know, like retail shopping, brick and mortar shopping malls, that's ingrained in our like culture.
Yeah. Yeah.
I was just going to add, if brands or merchants are listening to this, I would say shoot for the stars. That 33% number could be higher.
Thinking of how
China has transformed digital shopping.
It better not be, Cindy. It better be exactly 34%.
Yeah, exactly.
Otherwise, we will come find you. Let's move on to our next trend, digital banking. Shalene, what were you looking at in the world of digital banking with regards to 2030, what the world's going to look like?
Well, yeah, in 2030, we expect that almost 85% of the population will access their bank account digitally at least once per month. And of those who bank online, 90% of them will do so via the mobile device. But in-branch banking will not become a thing of the past in 2030. It will still exist. So 60% of bank account holders will still visit a branch at least once a year. And we don't mean them going to the branch to withdraw money from the ATM. So ATM visits are not included in this number. So people are actually going to the branch to do, you know, real things like, I don't know, deposit cash or get a certified check, things like that.
Okay.
But what's interesting also is that, you know, while people are still going to the bank branches to get things done, there's also a portion of people who are getting used to the idea that totally banking online and not ever seeing a service personnel in person is totally acceptable. So by 2030, over 1 in 4 people will have a bank account at a digital only bank. And these are banks that do not operate physical branches. So everything is done via phone or internet.
Okay. Huh. So 85% of people will bank online. So we're saying 15% of people won't bank online.
Yeah, 15% of people won't even pay their credit card online, which is weird to me. So they're I don't know what they're doing. They're writing a check, I think, and sending it off.
Wait, in 2030.
Would some of that number include like unbanked people as well?
Well, yeah. Some of that. So it's 85% of the population. So
got it. Okay.
So that's that would make sense.
There are some that are unbanked, and I imagine most of the other folks are in the older demographic.
So I was going to ask, like, who do you think are the holdouts, like, in 10 years' time?
It would be the 65-plus, I think. But
in 10 years, the 55-plus have like would age into that group, the next age group.
It would be, like, the really old, maybe. Like,
I mean, we
say people are living longer. Yes, yeah, there's people who are going to be 100-plus.
We forget sometimes that we still have the silent generation. We don't talk about them, but there's still a lot of them. Maybe it'll be the baby boomers at that point, but some of the older baby boomers, I could see it, yeah.
Yeah, it is once a month too, I guess.
Right.
Like the frequency.
Right. I'm still pretty surprised that over half of people will still need to go into a branch. Mm-hmm. Just, you know, we're looking at trends that are current today and extrapolating that to the future. But, you know, if we could do all of our fundamental methodology on all of this, I can only imagine that banks are offering some of those very involved services like the certified check, like, you know, having a notary, all of those things, that they're making some of that available online over the next 9 years and just trying to take cost out of the, you know, the overhead cost of having a branch in the first place. So I wouldn't be surprised if it comes down from that number and maybe closer to half, but it still shocks me that I spend so little time in a branch. I don't even know if I get to that one time per year number, but I can't imagine it being just so ingrained, but certainly some people just prefer that.
Yeah, there's a relationship aspect too. I think some people just like that. So you can get some fees waived if you go in and speak to your relationship manager. So maybe some people do that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And neobanks are still such a sort of new concept that it definitely is tough to extrapolate the trends we're seeing now 9 years in the future because it's still so new here. So
What's really interesting as well is that, like, as an individual, what share of your time will you spend doing these different things? Because as you said, with a neobank, these digital only banks, 28% of people will have an account at a digital online bank, but they could still have an account at a bank where there's branches.
Right.
And so will it be that you go into the branch, you know, 5 times a year and you spend, you know, 90% of your time doing things online? And so what's the makeup going to be as an individual in terms of how you interact with your bank? All right, folks, time for a quick word from our sponsor, Basis Technologies, and then we'll be right back with the second half of our episode looking at the media world in 2030, where we're going to be looking at pay TV, digital video, and esports. Today's podcast is made possible by Basis Technologies. Basis Technologies has created a digital advertising platform that connects people, automates processes, and unifies channels, bringing together programmatic, site direct, search, social, and CTV into one single interface. And through the power of automation, Basis enable brands, agencies, and publishers to build and operate a healthy, secure, efficient, and profitable advertising organization. Ready to take control of your advertising? Just go to basis.net today. That's www.basis.net. Basis Technologies, the future of advertising has arrived. All right, folks, so in the first half of the show, we looked at 2030. In 9-10 years time into the future, what is the world of digital ads, shopping, and banks going to look like? And in the second half, which is right now, we're going to be looking at what the world in 2030 will look like for pay TV, digital video, and esports. Okay, we're back. We've got a couple more predictions for you for what the world's going to look like in 2030. Esports. Oscar, you looked at this one for us. Esports users, esports ads. What's the world of esports look like in 10 years?
Yeah, great. So I'd first like to explain kind of how we define it when we think of esports users. It includes its internet users who watch an organized gaming competition. And this is only hosted on digital video platforms. So we're not counting any sort of viewing on traditional or paid TV. But it involves competitions among professional players and teams. And so I just wanted to clarify that. But in terms of our predictions, where we currently are in terms of esports viewers, we say that close to 27 million Americans are currently esports viewers. What we're projecting is by 2030, there'll be 10 more million viewers. But kind of what that gets down to is that it's not growing extremely fast, like we've seen with some other activities or digital activities. So about 8% of the US population is currently an esports viewer. That'll reach 10% and then kind of not grow from there by 2030.
Yeah, by 2023, you were saying it's growing less than double digits. By 2027, 1 in 10 Americans being esports viewers, and it kind of stays there going forward. Why is that? What's capping it? What are the esports viewership hurdles?
Yeah, I mean, the pandemic was a really tough year for esports. There was a lot of cancellation of in-person events. Financially, it really hit the industry pretty hard. It was felt by leagues and teams and players as well. But, you know, when we think of what's kind of inhibiting more growth, it's also when you think of demographics, right? And it's really exploded in the last few years. But it is a bit of a niche type of, you know, interest, if you consider it. The fact that 1 in 10 Americans is already, or nearly 1 in 10 is already kind of watching these leagues regularly is exciting, you know, and I'm not trying to take away from that. But I do think that when you think of certain demographics, so people maybe over the age of 40, you know, it still has to do a lot more work to involve women and get them interested in watching. So it definitely skews a little bit more towards male viewers. And, you know, there was actually a survey from WARC recent that found that the proportion of new esports viewers in the US that had an interest or that were potentially interested in viewing was only 1%. So it does feel like maybe that ceiling is almost reached, like that cap.
That's surprising because I think of two things. One, a younger generation, which is driving this, and they're, you know, only kind of, there's only becoming more and more younger people, which seem to be more of a gaming generation. So I thought they would have pushed this a little bit further along by then. And then number two is if you were the esports head of the esports federation for the world, and you were like, what are the perfect circumstances that, you know, could be created where we could get people to stop watching regular traditional sports and watch esports? You'd say, if we locked everyone at home and took away regular sports and made them use their computers for a year and a half. Like, they seem like the perfect conditions for esports to just skyrocket. I'm really surprised it's not going to be able to, in our estimation.
And that's why 2020 was a bit of a surprise in some ways, right? Because things, even though a lot of tournaments were held in person, and that's part of this, the gaming community, and that the pandemic did affect that as well. I mean, we have to also consider that it's positioning itself against sort of, you know, your live sports, right? And while, you know, there's some data in 2019, esports received almost $2 billion in investment funding. Nuzu predicted revenue was above $1.1 billion in 2020. And this is worldwide, keep in mind. I thought of, you know, just my favorite team, FC Barcelona. They themselves surpassed the $1 billion barrier mark in revenue in 2018. You know, that's one team in one league in one country in the world.
Yeah.
So positioning itself against a whole, you know, behemoth of an industry is going to be tough.
Yeah. Yep. How about on the ad side of things, Oscar? Esports ad spending, I imagine that's going to be pretty capped as well.
Yeah, that will be as well. I mean, we think that it'll sort of lag. So it'll be growing a little bit faster than on the viewer side for a number of years. To give you an example, by 2023, viewer growth is at 6%. The ad spend growth is at 10%. So it'll lag, but it'll also start to flatten out. And as a percent of digital ad spending, you know, early on, we thought maybe it would gain on digital ad spending. It was at 0.1% last year in 2020. We predict that by 2030, it'll remain with that same share at about 0.1% of digital ad spending. So a small part of it, and it'll grow kind of hand in hand with digital ad spending in general.
Okay. And what were the total dollars on that roughly? The 0.1%, what does that mean of digital ad spending?
Yeah, the dollars, it's a little bit over. So it's $215 million in 2021.
Okay.
So it's small, as we just talked in terms of as a share of the whole market. But it'll reach to close to $340 million by 2030. So it will continue to grow.
Okay. Yeah, you make a great point about competing with sports, even, you know, baseball, basketball, and hockey. I'm pretty sure all of those three combined, like, they struggle to rival the ad revenues of the NFL. If you're going up against NHL, you know, which is the fourth most popular, or even the MLS, which seems to be coming, as according to some surveys, the fourth most popular American sport, there's a lot to compete
with. Exactly. It's more of a sport by sport thing. I mean, ESPN recently shut down its esports content division, which does not bode well, you know?
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Interesting.
But it needs to maybe position itself against a specific sport, maybe a little bit further down the line. But it will continue to grow. And as you said, what it does have going for it is the Gen Z generation. But, you know, there's other ways to view video game content. It doesn't have to be in this kind of organized, you know, league type of format. So consider that as well.
Yep. Okay, let's move to our final prediction, telemedicine. Shalene, you looked at this for us. Let's define it first, because telehealth, telemedicine, telestuff, what are we talking about here?
So to define telemedicine, it's basically an adult who uses real-time audio, video, text, or chat to connect with their doctor to get diagnosis, treatment, or care at least once a year. So we're saying by 2030, a third of the adult population will be using telemedicine. And to give that a little bit of context, this year, less than 1 in 5 of the adult population will use telemedicine, and that will jump to 1 in 3 by 2030.
Okay. So telemedicine is, I'm using like my phone or something to have an appointment with my doctor once a year. Maybe I use a tablet to have some kind of appointment. Does it have to be like a A visit with a doctor? Could it be checking results, perhaps doing other activities?
Well, it has to be first. It has to be real test time. Results. It has to be real time.
Oh, real time, you mentioned.
Speaking
okay.
to your physician or any other healthcare service provider.
Got it. Okay. Okay. So 18% using it today, once a year. Let's rewind for a few seconds because this is a relatively new number for the forecasting team, I believe. What change? How did that number change over the last couple of years? How did the pandemic affect that number?
Yeah, so Americans have been historically, you know, they have been very slow at adopting telemedicine due to the fear of receiving inferior quality of care. But, you know, since the pandemic happened, the willingness to use telemedicine rose, you know, because people were trying to avoid crowded doctor offices and, you know, just, you know, keep and so just social distance at themselves at home. So, and also health insurance companies have been starting to accept telehealth bills. So that also helped to drive the adoption of telemedicine since the pandemic.
Hmm. Interesting. So there was some research from Ipsos. Oscar, I think you were on the show the week you listened when I was talking about this research. We were discussing activities that Americans would rather do in person versus at home if both were safe and possible. And I was surprised to see that the activity people were most likely to return to in person was going to the doctor. 67% said, I'd rather go back in person. 18% said at home is good for me. That was the number one activity people most likely to return in person for. Any thoughts, folks, from anyone else on, you know, a third of Americans using telemedicine once a year in 10 years' time?
Yeah, Marcus, I was equally as surprised by that study. I'm not sure I buy it, I guess is the way to say it. I know people hate going to the doctor's office. Maybe they thought they would love telemedicine because they wouldn't have to go in person, and then they hated it too because they just hate doctors, period, and dentists, period, and all that. So maybe they're just never happy with medical care. I don't know what it is. I just don't buy that. I think that, you know, it makes sense to me. I think that doctors do have to incentivize, you know, their patients to use these services more. I feel like they could, you know, bill more hours if they fit in more people into their schedules that way. So it'll be interesting how they might do that. But yeah. I think that number is totally, you know, attainable.
Yeah. And I don't think it's like you're replacing all of your visits with the doctors. I mean, there's some visits you need to do in person when you have your checkups. But I mean, there are some that can be replaced. Like, I mean, I know that you said that we don't count, you know, getting results, but if it's like getting a results and having the doctor speak about them, you know, why would I drive like an hour away or, okay, maybe not an hour, but why would I drive to a doctor?
Why are you going to the doctor, Sydney? There's got to be somewhere closer.
I live pretty far outside the city now. But yeah, like why would I drive all the way just to get the results and have him speak about them?
For, or like seasonal ailments too. Like even, you know, it's spring or in the winter where it's a lot of flu. And so I agree with that.
Yeah. Go on, Shilling.
Yeah, I think COVID or some variation of COVID is something that we'll have to live with from now on. It's like sort of like a new normal for us. So I think if people can avoid going to a crowded doctor office, I think they will do so. If it's, you know, for small ailments like pink eye or something, you don't really need to go. You just need to say, hey, I've got pink eye, and then they'll give you the prescribe you something. Yeah, so you can save that trip.
Yeah,
why not? That's why that Ipsos study, I just don't.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yes, I definitely agree. And especially as the technology allows for that real time experience that doesn't feel like subpar care, like Shalene is describing with pink eye or probably a chat about, hey, I wanted to see if you would recommend this type of doctor to me. Maybe I'm looking for a new dermatologist or I'm looking for a new anything. And that's something you would typically go to your primary care physician and say, hey, I would like a recommendation to this other doctor. And maybe that's something they can do over video chat or over real time chat. So I'm sure there are instances where that's going to make sense. And I was surprised by the one third number too. It just seems like a lot of sessions. But honestly, if a doctor is making time for those sessions right now in person, it's a lot less on the doctor's office, the scheduling nightmare around that whole thing. And that's how things have been transacting up until now. So I could just see it as win-win for everyone.
Yeah, Oscar, you talked about doctors pushing it more, you know, able to fit more patients in, I guess they'd also run more on time because, you know, one person's 5 minutes late and that has a domino effect on the rest of the day. Shalene, are we talking, are we including mental health services in this?
Yes, we do.
Okay. Okay. So yeah, there are going to be different things you're going to want to see the doctor for. And so yeah, maybe a telehealth visit, telemedicine visit, it does the job. Maybe you need in person. I think also there are going to be people maybe going to the doctor less and less in the future, but that in person, but maybe that doesn't mean that doesn't translate into telehealth. Similar to how, you know, people are moving away from watching sports, live sports on traditional services. That doesn't mean they're going to end up, like I was saying, on streaming platforms. Some of them are going to consume content differently, like highlights and things. Similarly with this, some people may be going to the doctor's office less. They may not need a telehealth visit. We could just be feeding more of our data into things like Alexa devices or smart watches. And so preventative medicine becomes a thing as we constantly, daily, weekly, put information into these wearables or just home devices, and doctors can monitor us from a distance. And so maybe we don't have to speak to them as much anyway. All right. Well, that is it for the show. Let me just recap some of those trends for you folks. We covered a lot of ground. Pay TV households in 2030, we expect there to be 35% of households with pay TV, down from 58% today. Digital video. Top three will be Netflix, Prime Video, and Disney Plus. Disney Plus will overtake Hulu to take that third spot. And 70% of people will be streaming some kind of video through a paid service by 2030. Social network wise, the top three will be Facebook, Instagram, and then TikTok will take the third spot away from Snapchat sometime in the next couple of years, we expect. Then esports. Esports users, just 1 in 10 Americans watching esports, and the ad spending will remain low, 0.1% of digital ad spending going to esports, as in the hundreds of millions of dollars. And finally, telemedicine. A third of people, 33% of people using telemedicine once a year by 2030, up from 18% today. So that's what's going to be going on in 2030. Maybe by 2030, we'll also have figured out the rules of lacrosse. Who knows? Who knows the rules? Does anyone know how that game is played?
Not at all.
Makes no sense. You can just run into me for no reason.
I think
it's chaos.
I learned about bag toss this weekend. It was all over ESPN.
What is that? That sounds very made up.
We watched, or we didn't watch, but I found there's like a world tag competition.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Actually,
that
tag.
Is not made up. That is real.
No, that's real.
And
that
it's
was
crazy.
Like on NBC.
Yep.
And I was like, what is
Yeah, they jump through like a jungle gym type arena to try and tag someone. It's very intense for no reason whatsoever.
like, how do you train for that?
No one knows. It's crazy. Oscar, bag toss? What are you talking about?
What's the official name of that sport?
Do you mean
cornhole? Cornhole.
You mean cornhole? Bag toss?
What? That's what I call it.
Okay, cornhole. You are the only person on the entire planet calls it bag. Cornhole. What about cornhole? What's wrong with cornhole?
That, you know, you were talking about lacrosse. I said I just learned all about cornhole rules, and it's
what's there to learn about cornhole rules? What do you mean?
Just that it's 3 points in the hole. It just, you know, you subtract 1 point
from the
other. Oh, the
official rules of cornhole.
Things like this, but it's exciting. Exciting
okay.
Stuff.
So if we ever play cornhole with Oscar, he's like, no, we'll play official rules.
Okay? I even learned
that. Everyone's like, oh, great, he's going to be a bag of laughs.
Yeah, don't play with me. I'm good.
That's all we have time for this episode. Thank you to all the guest voices you heard on this very episode. And thanks to Victoria. She edits the show. And thanks to everyone listening. A huge thank you to everyone who made this podcast possible in 2021 and all the previous years. Thank you to everyone who contributes and to everyone who listens. We'll see you on Monday for a newish Behind the Numbers Daily, an e-marketer podcast made possible by Basis Technologies. Starting from Monday, January 3rd, you'll be getting a new and improved Behind the Numbers podcast. We have a brand new logo. So you'll notice a more modern, professionally designed logo for this podcast, which will help you distinguish between each of the 5 shows that we have for you that sit under the Behind the Numbers brand. We have The Daily, The Weekly Listen, Around the World, Brand Anatomy, and Reimagining Retail. They're each of the 5 shows we have for you. And we've refreshed The Daily to bring you the information you need in a more succinct and clearer format. And we, of course, will be continuing with old favorites like The Weekly Listen and Around the World, and new shows we just launched at the end of last year like Brand Anatomy and Reimagining Retail. See you in 2022, which is like in a few days. I'll see you soon.